We got, I know we got up to verse 16 and 10 last week. We'll touch base on, I think, 16, 17, and 18 we'd already covered, but I'm going to start back with 16. I always like to repeat. Proverbs repeats, I like to repeat Proverbs, and to bring us back to where we were. The labor of the righteous tendeth to life, the increase of the wicked to sin. You know, we've gone into this over and over, and we'll be going to it many more times about labor and the worth of labor and how God wants us to labor and the value of us having a work ethic. And it says right here that the labor of life tended to life. It's a good life. You get a reward in life for being a laborer, for being a worker, for being someone who produces. But if you're in the sinful state, then the sin only leads to more sin. So you have a choice there. We have a choice there of what we're going to do. Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry, what chapter was that?
Chapter 10.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anybody got any comments on that? Before we're over with, laziness and labor and all that's going to be, and we're going to have a good lesson in that. In 17 it says, he is in the way of life that heedeth correction, but he that forsaketh reproveth error. We know that when they say he's in the way, or we're in God's way of life, if we heed his correction, if we heed his discipline, if we heed his advice, if we don't reject the correction that he gives us when we are in error, which is in a lot of cases like mine, I'm in error a lot, so I need his correction. But he that forsaketh, he that turns his back on reproof, he that blames God for his problem rather than seeing the error in his life, then he continues in that era. You know, a good example of this, you know, Absalom was a great example of one who wouldn't accept reproof. And of course, he caused great grief to David because of that. But then we can look back through the history of the Bible, we can look back through our history and see that a lot of us have been guilty of refusing reproof, refusing to be corrected, refusing to admit honestly that we were wrong. You know, but that seems almost the hardest thing for me, and I guess for a lot of people, say, I'm sorry, I was wrong. If you think about that, how many times has it come out of your mouth? I was wrong, and I'm sorry for it. We just have and it's almost like an ingrained tendency to deny or admit, I should say, that we were wrong, which is no more than vanity, by the way.
Yeah.
It's no more.
Yeah. One of the things I did you believe that it shows the character of a person when he's willing to commit his wrong.
All right.
I have certainly been wrong. I apologize. And I wasn't ashamed to do it. Because I think when you do that, people see you hopefully for what you are. Mm-hmm. And trying to be godlike and they reject it. So and admit when you're wrong, a lot of folks don't want to admit that. They want to accept the fact that they make mistakes.
Yeah.
They're not perfect, but right? None.
Ray, I hate to admit, or I'm trying to count the number of times I was sitting in that seat after hearing the sermon that really hit home and didn't go forward. You know?
Yeah.
It's just pride and vanity to keep from doing that.
Talking about refusing correction. I studied with an uncle of mine for months and years, and we were talking about of course, baptism for the remission of sins. He grew up in the Baptist church. And one day, I just wrote down several scriptures. I said, just take these and read them. And come back and tell me what you say. You come back next time I see him, he said, no, I disagree with you. That's somebody that refuses correction right there. And I mean, I didn't have any commentary, no comments, no statements. I just told him some verses to read. No, I disagree.
That's the first step in trying to convert somebody or trying to talk to someone, is they've got to believe that the Bible is 100% pure and true. You've got to start with me. Otherwise, then they're just picking to death. They're picking to death. Number 18. He that hideth hatred is of lying lips, and he that utters slander is a fool. We talked a little bit about this last week, and we acknowledge this. But what we probably don't do, and I think we talked on this a little bit, that any time that we transfer gossip, sometimes you can't help but hear it because you don't even know what they're talking about until you hear the whole story. But then to transfer it, to take it on, becomes a greater, if there is such a thing as a greater sin. It could be a sin just to listen to what someone had to say, but then to transfer it. So gossip, we always think, if we just stop saying the word gossip, then we'd say sin. Because that's sin, instead of gossip. We change the word, you know, that to kind of tone it down a little bit, just like we change the word on killing little babies to abortion. We have a tendency to do things like that, to just change the word on it. Okay, never go pick up fresh. Verse 19, mm-hmm. In a multitude of words there warneth not transgression, but he that refraineth his lips doeth wisely. You have we've all met these people that continuously talk. And sometimes we'll get in a conversation and one person, or maybe two in it, want to compete with each other and talk. But the more words, and this is what God is telling you here, The more words you sit there and spit out, you're going to spit out sins. You're going to tell some lies. You're going to exaggerate. There's no difference between, by the way, exaggeration and lies. you've changed the text of what your conversation was by adding something on there that's not true or just partially true, but you presented as being true. So be careful if you're around people who just want to continually talk. And we certainly don't want to be one of those that continually talk. We want to be a listener. And then as we get God's wisdom, then when we do say something, they will heed your advice. But you don't have a tendency to do that if you're just around someone who talks all the time.
Yeah.
There's some other sayings that you can put on this. He who controls his tongue acts wisely, or the wise man will guard his tongue. We talk about the tongue telling lies. But what other great sins can the tongue get us into other than lies?
And change and stuff the way that we want it, as people say, the way they see it. Mm-hmm. You know, some people tend to do that. They will say, well, that's the way you see it. And you tell them, maybe trying to explain a portion of scripture, and they'll say, well, that's the way you see it. You know, or they'll change it their own self to tell it their way. We are supposed to be able to interpret into our own words to make things better understanding when you're trying to explain to someone. But our own words don't pose to change the context of what is being said.
As I was pondering over this particular verse, you know, I tried to so that I make sure that it sticks with me. You know, out of your mouth can come extreme hatred, vile language. Lust can come out of your mouth. You can actually, with your mouth, call someone to be killed or not be killed.
Yeah.
All out of your tongue, out of that tongue you got.
Yeah.
By the same token, compassion can come out of that mouth.
Said, let no corrupt speech proceed out of thy mouth, but that which is good unto edifying. Corrupt speech, pretty broad.
Yeah. It's pretty broad. Because a lot of things that we encounter on a day-to-day basis. You could, you know, convincing someone of salvation comes out of your mouth. You know, you can either hurt them or wound them deeply in the spirit and soul, or you can lead them to salvation. The mouth is, when James speaks on it, James, it's a powerful thing. James says it's an untamable tongue.
Yeah.
It'll get you in trouble. You don't control that tongue, it's going to get you in a lot of trouble.
Well, with all the social media and stuff, I mean, kids and adults alike will bully people because they're brave, because they don't have to say it to us in this space.
The tongue in America has gotten so vile with this language coming out of it, and that's in your songs. It's in your speech if it's not controlled. You know, it becomes part of the way you talk to someone.
When you see little kids, like 2 or 3 year olds, using vile language,
And then when they do, most of the times it's just laughed at. Did you hear what he said? And they laugh at it.
He needs correction.
Of course, verse 20 and 21 are going to continue in the same mode. The tongue of the righteous is of choice silver.
Yeah.
The heart of the wicked is of little worth, of little value. To paraphrase this a little bit, sinful persons make a great show on the outside, but there's nothing within them that's worth seeing. Peter said to the lame man, if you remember when he was first started off his ministry, he says, silver and gold have I none, but words of life and strength I have you, as he healed the man. He had no precious jewels to give that man, no money to give that man, but he had the word of life, and that, of course, healed him. The tongue. Verse 21, the lips of the righteous feed many, but the foolish die for lack of understanding. How can the lips of life of the righteous feed many? In what ways can the lips of the righteous feed many?
Feed them with knowledge.
Huh?
Feed them with knowledge.
Yeah. Two ways. You can feed them spiritually, with God's knowledge and wisdom. Or you can feed them physically by providing food, or tell them how to get food, or give them food, or direct them to food. So you can get both spiritual and physical food from our lips. But the foolish die for lack of understanding, for lack of common sense, and the foolish don't have that advantage. The food, of course, that buys them eternal life is found in John 6:27, and that's when Jesus gave us the bread of life. Anybody got any thoughts on those two? We'll switch it off a little bit, off of the tongue there for a little bit, for a few more things. The blessings of Jehovah, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow to it. How does it make us rich? the blessings of Jehovah. He can make you, of course, he can make you rich spiritually, but God has blessed us in many ways physically, with physical things. He certainly blessed Solomon with many riches. But God doesn't add sorrow to that. It was Solomon that added sorrow to his blessing.
Mm-hmm.
It was Solomon that went to say, if God blesses you with gaining a new car or being able to buy a Ford new house or whatever, he's not going to bring any sorrow with that. You can bring sorrow by using that car in an unhealthy way, driving drunk or driving recklessly or things like that. But God doesn't add that sorrow to you. You add that sorrow to the blessing of being able to buy the car. And Solomon is. He's a great example of adding sorrow to a tremendous blessing that God gave him. Any comments? Don't let me get by without getting some of this wisdom in this class. We got plenty of wisdom here. It's a sport to a fool to do wickedness. And so is wisdom is to a man. Some people are so sinful, it's like a game to them to get their buddies involved into it, or to do it together, or to entice them to get into some sort of wickedness. Because that's a wickedness that's in their heart. Peccatory people, as we would say, a peccatory sinner. Same thing about wisdom, and that it should be joy in your heart to get someone to share your wisdom and God's wisdom with someone, to get them to have good understanding, get them to have good godly common sense. Sometimes it's just a sport for a fool or a sinner to commit lewdness. But then that becomes an abomination to those who are godly. You've taken sin to another level. Any thoughts on that? Okay. 24. The fear of the wicked that shall come upon them, and the desire of the righteous shall be granted. You know, we're always looking to people who are prospering out there, who we know that are doing things illegally or doing things crooked or doing stealing or whatever have you, and we think that they got it made. They got that big house. They got that big car. They got all those fine clothes. They're living going out to the restaurants all the time. But they're always looking over their shoulders to be caught. We think they're living in a peaceful life, but they're not. And that's deceiving to us to put that kind of a blessing on them, to think that they got it made, when in fact, looking over your shoulder is a good thing. If you've committed a great crime and you're on the run, for the rest of your life you're looking over your shoulder. There's no peace in that. And sometimes it takes 20, 30, 40 years for that to catch up with you. But you've still been in terror, somebody would catch you. The desire of the righteous shall be, God looks over our shoulder. That's when I answered the second one. And the desire of God, righteous, shall be granted. God's looking over my shoulder for me. I ain't worried about any great sin trying to catch up with me. Alright, 25. When the whirlwind passes, the wicked is no more, but the righteous is an everlasting foundation. The only thing I could put in here that would justify what I think this thing says is whirlwind. When God's judgment passes, the wicked will be no more. That's the end of it. But us, we who live under God, we have our everlasting foundation, which is on Jesus, our rock, the rock of our salvation. That's our foundation. And up in, we're going to get the, up in the next chapter, of, well, a few chapters up in 14. It says that righteousness exalteth a nation. It is the righteous people that exalteth a nation and makes a nation great. If you remember, for the lack of just a few people, Sodom and Gomorrah could have been saved. So that means that whole city was just unrighteous, except for those few people. Anybody got any thoughts on that? As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes. If you, if you ever been in a smoky, if you ever been in a smoky room? You ever been in a smoky room, you know how that hurts your eyes. Of course, I used to smoke many years ago. I didn't mind it then, but I went to the room here, you know. You could hardly stand in there. So is the sluggard that's in him. You get a lazy man. When we talk about a sluggard, we know we're talking about the lazy man. Yeah. You send a lazy man to do an important error, you're going to get a bad result. Mm-hmm. You don't pick lazy men to do good jobs. You get a bad ending. I wrote over here, bad ending. Bad ending. There's no, it would say, no worse messenger than a lazy messenger, because he's liable to get your message there. If you do get it there, it's going to be done in a haphazard way. 27. The fear of Jehovah prolongeth days. We've went over that as many verses up to this point. We're going to have some more before we get through. The reason prolongs many days is because that fear of Jehovah is the beginning of wisdom. You've got to fear God in an awesome way to even start gaining wisdom. And when you gain godly wisdom, then you're going to keep yourself out of a lot of trouble that you would not have been in. A lot of situations that you would have avoided because you had better sense. You had good common sense. And then, of course, if you don't have that, then your life will be shortened.
Yeah.
That's sinful acts. You know, simple act that someone could have is that would shorten their life, of course, would be the wicked deeds that they would do. There'd be repercussions from it. Someone would shoot him, a drunken driver. The act that he's doing of driving that car could kill people or himself. A robber that's trying to rob could be shot in the act of robbing. An adulterer could be slain in vengeance from the other spouse. And the list goes on and on and on. So we want to get God's wisdom, is what we want to say. We want to get God's wisdom. Anybody got any comments? Okay. Number 28. The hope of the righteous shall be gladness, but the expectations of the wicked shall perish. Our hope and our faith, you know, with God, our end result will be glad, but all that someone can do is expect to perish. His life, when it's over, his role was dead all over. All is gone. The end result, except for the punishment that comes after that final judgment. 29. The way of Jehovah is the stronghold of the upright, but his destruction is to the workers, but it is destruction to the workers of iniquity. Again, emphasizing us that God, you know, God is our stronghold. He's our strength. But without him, then the wicked people are going to be destroyed. If you're talking about a battle going on, a contest going on, there's absolutely no way that wickedness is going to win out in the very end. You can't win against God. 30. The righteous shall never be removed. Boy, that's a strong promise.
Amen.
Never. The righteous will never be removed.
That's
great. God is eternal right there. I wrote on the end of that. But the wicked shall not dwell in his land. In the land. So we have eternal hope. We look forward to a new heaven and a new earth dwelling in righteousness. And 2 Peter 3:13 tells us that in plain words. 31 and 32. Go back to the tongue. Proverbs hits us over and over, that tongue. The mouth of the righteous bringeth forth wisdom, which of course bringeth forth understanding. But the perverse tongue shall be cut off. There'll be a time when they will not speak. It's also a glimpse of the final and brutal punishment that will be for those people. The lips of the righteous know what is acceptable. How do the lips of the righteous know what to say and is acceptable? Through God's wisdom. Through God's wisdom, that's how we know that. But the mouth of the wicked speaketh perverseness. Thy speech betrayeth thee. Matthew 26:7-3 says, was aptly applied to the Apostle Peter at the time he was being corrected. But it also fits all of us. If we talk long enough, our speech will betray us. We just keep talking and talking and talking. And like we said, this sin is going to abound in the words of, in the way of lying or exaggerations. Anybody got a comment on chapter 10?
Chapter.
It is a good chapter. I beg you to ponder over these things individually. I know the first time I was ever introduced to Proverbs, I just thought it was a bunch of cliche sayings. And good sayings, but just cliche. And go over and just never even ponder to think about them individually. And then try to put those individual things into my life. But the more I read, the more important I see that it is to try to do that. Number 11, chapter 11.
Oh, yeah.
A false balance is an abomination. I want you to see that my book says abomination. I don't know if yours says that or not, but that is an abomination to Jehovah. But a just weight is his delight. To give you a background of how the author can say that is very important. Back in those days, they didn't have scales. They didn't have digital readouts where you could, the number would come up there and tell you what something was. They used rocks of different weight. And they would use the, if a vendor or a merchant was going to buy something, because he wanted to buy it with a light rock. But if he wanted to sell something to you, he was going to put it on scale. He had another rock. He pulled in, it was heavier. So you were paying for more than what you were getting when you didn't know it. And when you think about that, how can you dispute that? You don't have the scales like he does. I mean, you don't have the rocks all polished out. He knows what the weight's on, but you don't know what the weight's on. If you can take two at the same time and put them on the scale, then you see where he was trying to get you, you know. But that kind of dishonesty goes through life. It's not just on scale. It's any time that we try to pull something over on somebody. Like perhaps selling them something that we know has a great flaw in it, and we pass it off as, boy, look at how nice this thing is. It's worth this amount of money right here. Oh, I shudder to think when you go out, or when we go out, not me, you, when we go out to buy gas, I did something on this right here. If you go out to buy gas, you don't know how those things are giving you a gallon of gas or not. there's a control on there, and they're checked, supposed to be checked once a month or once a week. I don't know what the regulation is, but by law, they're supposed to be checked. A guy from the government comes around, and he checks it, makes sure that a gallon on that meter there is a gallon in the jug right here. They're both equal. But they have adjustments on them. If you go out there and buy a gallon, it's 128, I figured this out at this point. If you buy a gallon of gas, there's 128 ounces in that gallon. Gas sells for $3.50 a gallon right now. Will said that this is that would come down to 3 cents an ounce for every gallon of gas you buy. So Will said that guy wants to go out there and change that scale from 128 ounces to 122 ounces. So he's got you 6 ounces on that for 1 gallon. And then, of course, if he goes to multiply that by 3, so that's 18 cents. If you buy 10 gallons of gas, you've given him, well, he's cheated you out of $1.80 on 10 gallons of gas. So you multiply that. If you think a service station would service at least 100 to 150 cars a day, he's making hundreds of dollars a day. If you take a 7-day week, he's making close to $2,000 by cheating. And you and I never know that. Same thing about T-bone steak, by the way. T-bone steak per ounce is more valuable more valuable than the gas. He can change that scale back there a little bit and just get you out of 3 ounces. And instead of paying $12 or $13 for a T-bone steak, you'd pay about $13.50, $13.60. And I'm not saying they do that. I don't want you to get you wrong. I know it's been done. When I was a young fellow, where they used to have that old timer scale out there. Mm-hmm. I've known that guy to put buying string beans or butter beans or something like that. Mm-hmm. The way that scale there. The reason that's such an abomination of God, because we're helpless. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can do our homework on it, but we can't prove it. Mm-hmm. You can't prove it. So we got to be careful. I do try to buy my gas from what you think of reputable dealers. They don't have to do that, because they make enough money without doing it. They make enough honest profit of that, they don't have to do that. But some of them do. So you better be careful when you deal with people you don't really trust. Yeah.
It's funny you bring up scales. Prince George just went through an issue at the landfill where the guys were adding a few things and pocketing the money, but somebody caught on to doing good math when they saw the scale before and after and knew that they overcharged. But they were doing that for the longest time.
Yeah, that was just in the news, by the way. And I think over periods of time, there's thousands of dollars. Thousands of dollars of people willing to take your trash down and dump in that thing that you were overcharged for that. But that kind of dishonesty, well, God doesn't like any kind of dishonesty. But that, he listens to the abomination, because we're helpless. Someone is taking advantage of you in a way that you have no protection. You're dependent upon their honesty to be treating you right. Okay. Any kind of dishonesty is an abomination in God's sight. Okay. Number two, when pride cometh, then cometh shame, but with the lowly it is wisdom. Pride's a great sin. We know God listens as one of the great sins that we're to avoid. And pride will get you in trouble. We're told when we get further on in Proverbs, 13, 15, 16, 18, and 21st to 22nd chapters, this is going to be hit on constantly. But people must be aware of that. It's wiser to be honest, or modest. And in the sin of all mankind, pride Paul tells us that it was a sin that ruined Satan. It was pride that ruined Satan. 1 Timothy 3:6. I got 3, 5, and 6. Verses 5 and 6 is what I wrote down. That concerns the qualification of elders. Must not be prideful people. The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of the treacherous shall destroy them. Again, telling you, be careful of the reputation you have. If you're guided by honesty, people will recognize that. People who can't be trusted will be destroyed. Your integrity is going to depend entirely, your honesty with people, how they perceive you, is going to be entirely depend upon your integrity. Okay. Number 4, riches profit nothing in the way of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. You're not going to take it with you. You're not going to take it with you. So don't. No matter how much you got, whether you have no abundance of it or not, you're not going to take it with you. But righteousness will save you at the time of death.
Amen.
Revelations 6:17 said that day is the day of the wrath of God, the judgment day. Five and six kind of linked together. The righteous of the perfect shall direct his way, but the wicked shall fall by his own wickedness. You go right down, it says, the righteous of the upright shall deliver them, but the treacherous shall be taken in their own iniquity. You want to be a righteous people, you want to be a godly person, and you just can't win against God if you're wicked. You're just not going to win. And that includes all our daily dealings that we have with people. Anybody got any comments on that? The indulgence of their passions will destroy sinners. Another translation of that would be, the righteous of the upright delivers them, but the unfaithful are trapped by the evil that they have in their hearts. Number 7, when a wicked man dieth, his expectation shall perish, but the hope of iniquity perisheth. And the hope of iniquity perisheth. Eight, the righteous is delivered out of trouble, and the wicked come in his stead. The righteous person, God's got your back. God's got your back. Remember when Daniel was in the lion's den, and he was saved in Daniel 6:24. Remember we talked about Haman? Haman was hung on his own gallows that he built for somebody else. Let's be careful. The righteous is delivered out of trouble, but the wicked will go in the stead. Both of them went in the stead of the ones they were intended for. With his mouth the godless man destroyeth his neighbor, but through knowledge shall the righteous be delivered. Again, using that tongue to destroy someone, to talk evil about them is untruth, to just destroy the relationship of a neighbor. But through knowledge shall the righteous be delivered. One must always suspect and reject the proposals and suggestions of men who are recognized to be wicked. When you're conversing with someone, You know by their act, you know by their words, you know by their reputation. You should suspect or reject their suggestions. Verses 10 and 11, I have down here, you can link these two. When it goeth well with the righteous, the city rejoices. But when the wicked perish, there is shouting. And then the blessings of the upright of the city is exalted, but is overthrown by the mouth of the wicked. To live in a good city, you've got to have justice prevail. You've got to have godliness prevail. Otherwise, the nation, whether it be a nation or whether it be a city, is going to be destroyed by the evil that's in it. We're in a turmoil in this country right now of which way we're going to go. We've got cities that are just unsafe to live in. In fact, it's on the news today about Chicago putting up signs just asking the gangs out there not to shoot through the daytime because we're hitting little kids. Instead of telling them not to shoot or we're going to throw you in jail, we do throw them in jail, they got a sign for, please don't shoot in the daytime. Don't shoot our little kids. Instead of going for the source of the problem. That's almost shameful. It's almost shameful to have to put that up there like that. What's that?
The problem, I think, is a lot of people just don't have any backbone. And don't want to do what's right. Even some of our law officials need to pan down on these people so that they will stop this foolishness. I watch a lot of forensic files, and the reason I look at it because these nuts think they're going to get away with it. They're going to get away with it. And, I'm just glad that the God we serve is a just God. He don't see you for what you are. And if you mistreat your wife or you mistreat your husband or you, he takes note of that. But I'm just glad that Proverbs is that. This is a remarkable book. And the more I read it, the more I learn it. It's remarkable, really.
Yeah. Let me.
Yeah.
They've got laws. You've heard about them in some of the major cities now, California, New York, Chicago. It's almost saying it's okay to steal. But don't steal anything over $900. If you steal over $900, then we're going to charge you for the felony. But it's okay to go out there and steal.
No, it's not.
I actually witnessed myself in the public store in Clear Heights, a guy sitting down at the counter, or was sitting at the row, loading things in the bag. I thought he was a vendor. He'd been there so long. I went up and down. And I looked over and he was putting facial creams and stuff in the bag. And then the more I looked at him, I said, you know, this man doesn't look like he needs all this stuff. So I called the elderly lady who was working in there. I said, well, she worked in there. I said, I think that guy's done this up to no good. So she went there and asked him what he wanted. He wouldn't talk to her. So she went and got the manager. He come around there. The guy just picked up his two bags and they were talking, you can't do that. He walked around the door. I followed him at the door. I took a picture of him getting in his car. Well, they did to him nothing. Didn't stop it. Didn't even call the police. I called the police.
You know, we talk about law and order. You cannot enforce the law unless you establish order. And when things get like they are in some of these places, you're not going to change it. You're going to have things happen that establishes order before the law can
right.
will matter.
Mm-hmm. That's all.